Hey, caregivers. It's hard to believe it, but we're about to begin Season 4 of Elder Care Illuminated, brought to you by Torchlight. I'm your host, Lenore Tracy, and here we are with a new season of podcasts to support you, who go to work every day, take care of your family, and care for a loved one who is aging or has a disability. We've got some great material in the works for Season 4, but if you have ideas or topics you'd especially like us to pay more attention to, please email me at ltracy@torchlight.care. We're always eager to learn what information you need and what might help you be the caregiver you want to be, or maybe just get you through the day.
Welcome to Elder Care Illuminated, Torchlight's caregiving podcast. Elder Care Illuminated addresses the ins and outs and ups and downs of caring for your loved ones. Join us for interesting conversations with elder care specialists, geriatric care managers, attorneys, and ordinary people with extraordinary caregiving experiences.
Welcome to today's episode of Elder Care Illuminated. I'm Lenore Tracy, your host and the Elder Care Practice Leader at Torchlight, which brings this podcast to you. Today, we're speaking with Mary Sue Wilkinson, the founder of Singing Heart to Heart and the Young at Heart music program. Hello, Mary Sue, and welcome to Elder Care Illuminated.
Well, hello, Lenore, and thank you for having me. I'm so glad that we connected.
Mary Sue grew up in Iowa and has been singing for her whole life. She's going to tell us more about that. She says that her passion for singing with elders started with her father-in-law, who had dementia. On your website, Mary Sue, you mentioned that your father-in-law had lost all language, but could sing every word of a song he loved and with perfect pitch. That's quite moving and astonishing. How did that develop into your current work, bringing music to memory care facilities?
Well, it was astonishing. And I would say that that doesn't always happen, but for him, it certainly did. And at that time, I didn't know anything about what was going on in the brain and music therapy or any of this. I just thought it was really amazing. I've been in education my whole life, and I was working for an organization that lost their state funding, and I had to reinvent myself. And I had always done a lot of music with young children. And I used to say, you know, my perfect job would be singing for little kids and old people. And so I began to do it. I'd been a professional musician for all those years through college and on beyond that. So I had a lot of music connections, and I had done a lot of singing with Virgil and the people at the place where he lived. And so it just seemed like a natural progression from there. So I started what at the time I called the Young at Heart Music Program. I still call the program that. There's a lot of Young at Hearts out there. So I've, you know, my company is now Singing Heart to Heart. But that was how it started. And I just started calling up and visiting and stopping in. And it grew from there.
It's pretty amazing. Do you also go to other types of residential facilities, or is your specialty memory units?
I do go to other places. I do specialize, ever since I connected with Tipa Snow, which was a real big impact on my understanding and on my work. Since then, I do specialize in using music in memory care. But I work at all different kinds of places.
And it's very special to bring live music to people. I want to ask a big question that probably has too many and too complex answers, so forgive me for that. But in layman's terms, why does music do something to and for human beings that no other form of art or expression does? What is it about music?
Man, that is such a great question, and it's one that I've given a lot of thought to and had discussions with other musicians about over the years. But, you know, music brings us a rather unique pleasure, right? And so there's lots of research on that going on now about the brain, what's happening in the brain that causes that. And we've learned that music lights up more parts of the brain than any other human activity. And I'm no scientist, so please, you know, your listeners, they may have additions or corrections to what I'm about to say. But in general, you know, music is vibrations and it's rhythm. And we think about, we have heartbeat and we hear our mother's heartbeat. And so that we start with that. And really our whole world is vibrations, whether we feel all of it or not. And then some of the research they've done has identified that listening to music reduces cortisol, which is a stress hormone, and it increases dopamine, which is happiness. So if you think about that, that makes some sense. And it's uniquely human. And there are basic elements of music structure that are worldwide. And I think that's just fascinating because music is so different. You know, Chinese music would sound very different to our ears. But the thing that I love about the research and what they're learning is how music, it brings us into like synchronicity with others. When you make music together, that's unlike any other art form, if you think about that. So there's just so much to that question. Like you said, it's a huge question. You know, Tipa sums it up. She says, you lose on the left in terms of people living with memory loss or dementia. You lose on the left and you retain on the right. And on the right side of the brain are parts of the brain that are linked to emotion. And there are other things, rhythm and music. So it's a fascinating question, and it's one that I'm hope they keep doing lots of research on because, I don't know, I'm fascinated by it, maybe more so than most, so I'm glad you asked that.
You know, I saw it myself in caring for my mom who had Alzheimer's, and she was a big music lover before she had the diagnosis, but it is one thing that carried through the entire time that she had it. It was meaningful, and it did something for her. What do you see? What do you observe when you go to a memory care unit and you're delivering a program? And maybe you could describe for us, do you bring instruments with you? What do you play? How does it go? And what happens to the people in front of you?
Sure. Well, I play guitar. And so I bring my guitar and I'm unpacking and chatting with residents and greeting them. Most often I go to places every week. So I get to know the people, and that's so valuable to me. That's a luxury I think that I have. So I arrive, I unpack my guitar and we chat, and I always start with "Hail, hail, the gang's all here." It's a cue for people. It's one that they almost just automatically start singing because it's so familiar, and they will recognize me that way. They don't always know my name, but they will know, oh, okay, this is what's happening now. So from there, I usually go to an upbeat song, something with a strong rhythm, because people's bodies respond to music almost just automatically. It's like they can't help it. You know, we've all done that. You're listening to something in the car and you're tapping your steering wheel or whatever. So I see the same thing. I see toes start tapping, maybe just sometimes it's as imperceptible as a fingertip. Their eyes might still be closed. Oftentimes the expressions don't change a lot. And that can be common with people that are living with dementia. There's more of a flat affect. Not always, but sometimes. So once we get them singing, then I see more smiles. And not everybody. There'll be people that will just nod their head. There will be people that will let you know because they're looking very closely at you, that they're engaged. And then there's others who are, you know, belting it out. So, and then we go from there. I keep it very familiar with groups that are living with dementia. I don't use songbooks, even though there are a lot of people that I think we underestimate their ability to read song lyrics, and they can. Individual clients I've worked with, I've found that I can use a songbook and they like that for a long time. But in a mixed group, that creates a division between me and the connection I want to have with people. So I do a lot of encouraging. We sound great, don't we? You know, I try to make things funny. I keep things uplifting generally, but not always. And I do take instruments. Sometimes I take shaky eggs. I take drums. It really depends on who the people are. And I do get to know them, like I said. So that's a luxury. I remember one time, one of my first places I played, one of my friends hired me to go sing with her dad. And there were other gentlemen, it was all men in the unit, and I started playing, and this man named John was out in the kitchen, and he had a lid from a plastic cup, like you'd get it from McDonald's or something, and he was clicking it with his fingers. he was very rhythmically clicking it. And then he would come out and walk around the room and tap on the back of the chairs of the other residents. And I thought, I didn't have access to his family to ask. I thought, this man might have been a drummer. So I borrowed a friend's snare drum and I brought it in with brushes and sticks. And he went to town. He was no longer verbal, but he just went for it with that. So you get a wide range of response. People sleep through it and then they wake up. They're actively engaged. They're moving. It's a really broad range. And my job is to be a really good observer and watch them and follow their lead.
I think that it's great that you are able to go back to the same places repeatedly and weekly. How nice for those facilities. Getting to know people is, I think, really, really important. And for our listeners who have a loved one maybe in a facility, I think that letting people like you who are coming and visiting with their parent or their aunt or uncle know a little bit about them. When my mom was in a facility, there was a little lady there and she liked to sit with us when we were singing, or she would participate. And one day it came out that she was from Canada, and we were singing something like America the Beautiful or something like that. And I don't know the words, but I got my phone out and got the Canadian national anthem playing.
Canada, yeah.
And she changed. Her eyes lit up. It was like, wait a minute, I know that. She was responding. And I think that knowing somebody's background makes a big difference. A lot of facilities have music programs and they're very focused on the 1940s and the 50s. My mother-in-law was in a facility. They had, it was like Elvis impersonators come every quarter. And I think about the baby boomers, and soon they are going to be the primary residents. They are now, the early baby boomers are entering that age group. Are you going to be belting out Janis Joplin for them? How do we keep in tune with the changing cohort of people that's going to pass through caregiving facilities, but also, like the lady from Canada, how can we make sure on the caregiver side that little details like that get out there to the program they're in, because it makes such a difference?
It makes a huge difference. And you were so intuitive to do what you did. I'm so glad to hear that story. You know, we've got to know our residents in so many ways, not just their music, but, you know, do they like it hot or cold or all those things, you know?
Yeah.
But in my perfect world, music questions would be part of the intake.
That's a great idea.
Yeah, and that's so simple. I actually wrote a little interview called Finding Memories Through Music, and I've given it out. I have it on my website. It's an ebook to, you know, ask those questions. What's the genre that they like? They could love or hate country music, or are they from Canada? Are they Christians at Christmas? You can't be complacent and just assume that everybody is going to want to sing all of our Christian Christmas songs. And as you pointed out, or what you did with your family, we have YouTube now. We have access on our phones to every song practically ever done. So there's really, you know, if we can find out a little bit, there's not really an excuse for not bringing in some other music. And it doesn't have to be, at least in my experience, because you have a mixed group, you don't have to have a whole music session on, for example, say songs from Puerto Rico. I mean, I had a client, his name was Claudio. He was part of a group. Oh my gosh, this was the most striking older gentleman. His name's Claudio. And I said, before his dementia got to the point where he couldn't communicate this with me, I said, where are you from? I knew he told me Puerto Rico. I said, do you have a favorite song? And it was El Corazon. So I don't know how to play El Corazon, but I pulled it up on my phone and I have a little wireless speaker I always take, so it sounds a little better. And we found that, and we would dance. And the rest of the people, they weren't singing along, but they could see the joy that Claudio was getting out of that, and they loved it. They enjoyed hearing, you know, music from another country. So it's not that hard to do. But to your point about Janis Joplin, I did have one place where I've already had been singing, you know, "Oh Lord, won't you buy me Mercedes?"
Excellent.
And we would do that. But I tell my friends, write down what you like. My son, he knows. He goes, "I know, Mom. Joni Mitchell, James Taylor." He can rattle it off because he knows what I'm going to want. Yeah. If I should ever not be able to provide it for myself. So, and you know, along those lines, folk songs. I have a new CD that just came out. It's folk songs. It's Sing Along with Mary Sue, folk song favorites for young and old. Those songs, they are not the songs of my youth in the sense that they were written when I was young or even my 91-year-old father. They've been around longer than that, but we still sing them. Oh, Susanna, kids learn them, and they're intergenerational, and they are a great go-to for so many reasons. Like staff, younger staff, they don't know the songs of the 40s and 50s. And so they're kind of excluded from participating in music sessions unless you do a few of those songs. Like, "Well, You Are My Sunshine" isn't really a folk song, but "I've Been Working on the Railroad."
Oh my gosh.
"Old
I've
McDonald's.
Been Working on the Railroad" is a perfect example. I used to visit and we must have had to sing that like 6 times in a row. And it's like, okay, well, we could sing that again. What do you want to sing next? How about "I've Been Working on the Railroad"? Okay.
Right. Yeah. And I'm glad that you went with that because repetition is something that I talk about this in my book, in the frequently asked questions. Don't they get tired of hearing, you know? No, they don't, because it helps them feel competent and they know it. And if they heard it 3 minutes ago or 5 minutes ago, that's why they're thinking of it now, because they can hold that thought. So that happens a lot. And I never say, "Oh, we already sang that." No, you just sing it again. So
I don't like to make comparisons between elderly and children, but it does resonate in the same way that a child will want to hear the same story over and over again. I think there's some connection there, that there's comfort, there's confidence, there's also, you know what to expect next. And what you're saying, that feeling of competence that somebody struggling with dementia is losing, which often comes with fear. So to be in the music and not be fearful and know what comes next and be comfortable, that's a gift. You mentioned something really important, I think. YouTube. A lot of people have their loved one living at home with them. And YouTube, if you can put it on your TV, if you've got a smart TV or just on your phone, there are some, you know, 2 hours worth of Mozart or Johnny Cash. That's a great resource. Thank you for bringing that up.
Yeah, that's funny. My dad is here for a month. He's 91. He's not living with dementia at all, but he was like, "Why does this big band guy, Russ Morgan, we came up with it." And I was able to pull it up on my phone and my speaker. And we just had the most lovely chat about big band musicians, you know. And in some residences where I visit, they'll have a big screen TV. And if you have a helpful staff person, you can pull up an original version of, and you can watch the Andrew Sisters singing "Don't Sit Under the Apple Tree." And it's so much fun. So yeah, YouTube is really a wonderful resource.
It is. And asking, you're probably, because you go there every week and you know the staff, are comfortable asking them to do something like that. But I think caregivers should get comfortable when they visit making suggestions and perhaps asking, "Well, maybe we don't need to have the Lucy show on, reruns of the Lucy show forever. How about we find something else?" I think it's hard to ask, but most of the time, places are pretty accommodating. If you come up with some good suggestions, especially that everybody is going to respond to. You said you sometimes brought in instruments like shaky eggs and things like that. Just a question about residents who were musicians. If they have a cognitive impairment, do they sometimes retain the ability to play an instrument?
Yes, absolutely. there's a woman named Joanne that lives in one of the places I sing regularly, and she was a concert pianist. And thank goodness I met her son the day she moved in there, and he explained all this to me in a conversation in the parking lot, or I wouldn't have known. But she was a concert pianist. They did provide a piano in the residence where she lived. And he told this great story that he got married recently, or a couple of years before, and his mom had memory loss at that point. And he said, my mom, no matter what song or what piece of music she was playing, would always end up playing Jingle Bells. Go into Jingle Bells. And he got married. He wanted his mom to play for his wedding, as she had done for so many other weddings. And he said, I don't care if she plays Jingle Bells. And he told the minister, don't be surprised if you hear Jingle Bells, you know. And it was that important to him. And she played that day in the rehearsal. She played Jingle Bells. And the day of the wedding, she did not. But at any rate, Joanne, I don't see her playing piano anymore. She's been there over a year now, I guess. But I can still tell what a musician she is. At first, it was singing harmony with me with the words. Her language is not, she's not as confident in language anymore, but she hums harmonies. So you see the people that have that musical background, it shows. You can see it. I can often find the people that I know they did something professionally, not even professionally necessarily, but that they were very musical. And that reminds me of, I did a session at the Dementia Action Alliance conference on music, using music and care, with Brian LeBlanc, who is living with dementia and is very musical. And he told me about that he doesn't play guitar anymore. He finds it hard to play the chords, but he sings in a choir. And he also does something that I thought was brilliant. He set his echo, his little echo speaker. I guess they're called echoes. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I don't have one. Those things that you talk to and they play music.
Yeah, it's an Amazon. I think it's an Amazon Echo.
Yeah.
I don't have one either.
Yeah. But anyway, he sets it at intervals to come on throughout the day for him so that he doesn't forget to play music. But anyway, yes, I definitely see people who played instruments like that John that had been a drummer, and Joanne that had played piano, and how that shows up. They hold on to that, yes.
Let's talk a little bit about how caregivers can use music at home and in their own interactions with the people that they love to improve the dynamic, especially, we've talked a little bit about YouTube and mentioned the Amazon Echo. Sometimes people with a cognitive impairment don't want to be cooperative. I'll say that, you know, it's shower time, it's bath time, it's time to change from one activity to another. Any recommendations how music could play a role for, I guess I'm talking about transitions.
Yeah, I think music can help you grease the wheels. You know, it's not a cure-all. It's like with any of us, the same thing doesn't always work, you know, every time. But music can be used as cues. And that would be the strongest suggestion I would have. So if there is always a song that you use to cue that it's shower time, and it might be something that not only has, like, I'm gonna wash that man right out of my hair, or, you know, something like that, that has some lyric content that might relate to the activity. You can't always do that, but even just a song that cues it. So there's that. That would be the biggest thing. I also think that one of the things that I found when I arrive to sing is caregivers in the communities are gathering people up, right? And people don't always want to walk with them, right? They don't know why. Come on, we're going to music or whatever. They plant themselves, and that can be a problem. And one of the things that works really well is to sing something that has a march beat, like I've been working on the railroad, or gonna take a sentimental journey. And if you link arms that way and just walk and relax with them, that can help. It can soothe, it can distract. It's just sort of breaking into song, as kind of goofy as that might sound, can get you off the dime.
Yes.
You know what I mean? And sometimes there's that conflict, and the care partner is getting stressed and tense, and they're tightening up. If they can take a breath and try a song, it won't always work, but it will work sometimes.
And you are bringing up that point of getting off the dime. Sometimes for someone with a dementia, it's hard to initiate yeah. movement or initiate, yeah. Start something new. And you just made me smile, because what we did with my mom sometimes, I don't know if this was something that was from your childhood, but we had kind of a walking thing where we'd say left my wife and 48 kids, right. Right in the middle of the kitchen floor.
Oh, I love that.
I didn't sing it for you because you don't want me to do that. But my mom would laugh. There's a German version of that that's even slightly worse than leaving your wife and 48 kids right in the middle of the kitchen floor. But she would laugh and she would start to move. But I haven't thought about that for a while. That was actually a fun thing. And it got her walking down the hallway and sometimes yeah. other people following.
The other thing I just want to mention about care partners at home is it's challenging when your spouse, your parent, someone you love that you had a certain relationship, you don't have that same relationship anymore, and yet you love them and you want to share some intimacy with them. And music can do that. And it could be just a 2-minute dance to a song if they're on their feet still. It could be swaying, sitting next to them. It could be, I love it when family members come and it gives them a chance when I'm, leading a singing thing. If they sit and look face to face with their loved one and they share that song. And I just think that because there's such hard work being a care partner, and you lose that chance to just sort of relax for a minute and be on the same level, so to speak, and just share a song.
Yeah. And often what you're doing with the person you love is completing some task that has to be done. You've got to get dressed, or you've got to take a shower. You've got to get a meal prepped and into the person, or whatever it is. Music is an opportunity, or it's a time to just experience something together. And being face to face, that's actually kind of an interesting thing. I'm going to think about that and think about the opportunities that I made happen to actually look at each other. So we're so busy and focused on getting it done, rather than, it's the difference, I guess, between the doing and the being part.
And we have to remember too, that their visual field has changed. As the disease progresses, it comes inward, and at the end, it's monocular. So if you're not really face to face, like close, you're not in their field of vision. And so and their dominant side, so they can hear you. There's, not to make it too technical, because we don't want to make this a hard job. Oh, now I have to learn how to do this as a care partner, but just to be close.
I think those are important things. And even if someone has hearing loss and hears better on one side than the other, right. Were talking about letting your son know what music, or making sure he knows what music you like. I'm thinking now, I talk frequently with people about the important documents that you want to have, your will and your advance directive and your healthcare proxy. I think there is a lot of value to perhaps providing information like you're suggesting about the music that you think you would like to hear, perhaps the books or the poems that you love. Any way that care can be made more individual, especially for people who are living in a facility, improves the care.
I think we have to know people, like you knew your mom, you knew your mother-in-law. We have to know people. And so often people in residences, the staff, I might pick up something where I'm able to say to a caregiver, did you know Joanne was a concert pianist? Isn't that amazing? Oh, I didn't know that. So now they have a new respect for Joanne, and they're going to treat her differently.
Yeah. So. And did you know the lady that I mentioned who was from Canada, she was a nurse. And once the people knew that, who took care of her, they had a better understanding of how she was responding when there was a fall on the unit, or when something happened, because she was kind of getting in there and was probably in the way a little bit. Well, wait a minute. Yeah. There were some deeply embedded cues And her nurse self was responding to somebody who needed help. When they knew that, things changed for her a little bit. I talked about cueing people when my mom lived here at home with me. I put on the same CD every night at bedtime. And my mom loved classical music. Mm-hmm. And I hoped that the repetition of the music at the same time every evening would signal for her that it was time to go to sleep. And I have no idea whether that was effective. Sometimes she went to sleep. Sometimes she didn't go to sleep. But I hoped that it would create a mood and expectations. And maybe it did it for me. I thought I was doing something for her. It's possible I was actually doing something for me, which brings me to want to ask you for your thoughts about the role of music for the care partner, the person who is taking care of a loved one who maybe isn't a performer or program provider like you are. What do you do for yourself musically, and what can our working people out there who are so tired, what can they do for themselves that will allow music to give them something?
Well, ironically, the first thing that comes to mind is to remember to use it. And it's like I personally have to remember to practice what I preach, because I sometimes, you know, I play in bands. I have a lot of music in my life. I sing during the day, but I will sometimes forget if I'm feeling down that if I put on this music or that music, it's going to cheer me up, or to use it when I can't sleep at night, you know. I think that really, as crazy as that sounds, even for my dad, who loves music, he doesn't play it at his house very often. If I go to visit him, I say, "Dad, let's get the CD player out." And I put on Louis Armstrong, and it changes things up. And so really, it's kind of as simple as remembering to use it, for starters. I think music for me and for care partners who do not have a lot of time, we have to think of it, or it's okay to think of it as a moment of rest. Sometimes all you're going to get is 2 minutes, you know, a minute and 40 seconds of a song. But if you can sit with a song for even just that long, it can refresh you. It can help your tired brain shut down for a minute, or it can energize you. So we don't have to think of it as a big thing that we have to plan for or do in any prescribed way, but remember to use it. And remember that just moments of rest might be all you're going to get right now. Let's get real. You don't get to just say, "Oh, I'm going to take a nap for an hour and a half." Sometimes a song is a short moment of rest, but it can renew you.
That's true. It can take you somewhere else.
Yeah, exactly.
Out of where you are. And I also think I should mention, as I listen to music in my own life, and I listen to audio recordings of readings, sometimes silence is the best thing.
Yes.
And I don't have a lot of silence in my life, but sometimes I remember when I'm in the car and I say, "Oh, all right, I'm going to turn off the radio, turn off the book, and just for 5 minutes have nothing."
I'm really glad you mentioned that, because I have known people who mistakenly, in my view, would leave music on 24/7 in their family member's room because they knew they liked music. For me, as a music person, I would go crazy if I didn't have silence at some point. So balancing that, and also being aware of environmental noises. You know, you and I made sure, this is the backstory, folks, before we started, that we weren't going to have dogs barking. And, you know, we wanted to keep the focus on our conversation and not have a lot of distracting noises. And that's true for people who are sorting out all kinds of environmental noises when they're listening to music. So to be aware of that and not assume that because they have a brain disease that they don't care that you're talking right next to them while they're trying to listen to music. So it's kind of one of my pet peeves. So I'm glad I got a chance to get up on that soapbox.
No, that is a really good point. And especially for people with hearing deficits, that ambient noise detracts from listening to a conversation or listening to music, I imagine, because it's all jumbled or something. Yeah. Mary Sue, thanks so much for spending this time with me today. I think that the joy you bring to your audiences must add immeasurably to the quality of these people's lives. We could all use more music, and probably more silence also, both caregivers, care partners, and loved ones. And I'm very grateful that you made the time to talk to us today. Thank you.
Well, thank you for inviting me. It's my thing to talk about this and to try to be a resource for people. We're not all musicians. Not everybody grew up playing music like I do, but we all can bring music into the lives of older adults, and they're losing their music if we don't help them. So it's really appreciate what you do with your podcast, but also just having the opportunity to hear about your experiences with your mom. And it's people like you that have done it, you know, collaborating with people like me that are out here working. Hopefully we can, I don't know, may I say change the world?
You may. Let's
All right.
change
All right.
the world. Yeah. Mary Sue, tell us your website, please.
Okay, sure. It is singingheart2heart.com. And it's not the number two, it is T-O, singingheart2heart.com.
Excellent. And that will be also in the show notes of this episode. Listeners, just a reminder that Elder Care Illuminated is a production of Torchlight, which supports working caregivers and their families. If you don't have access to Torchlight in your employer's benefit plan, ask your employer to call us. Contact information is on our website, torchlight.care. See you on the next episode. You take care now.
Thanks for listening to Elder Care Illuminated, a Torchlight caregiving podcast. Find other episodes of Elder Care Illuminated on iTunes, Spreaker, and Podcast Go. If you're interested in bringing Torchlight Elder or any of Torchlight's other caregiving products to your workplace, please contact info@torchlight.care. That's info@torchlight.care.